Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you so much, Grant, for joining us today. We're thrilled to have you as a guest. And maybe you could kick us off by sharing a bit around your career journey.
Yeah, happy to do so. I'm delighted to be here. So I had an early career in banking and finance. So that was my start into the business world. And I think one of the benefits I had was I was entering a place that was really well thought out. So that processes were refined, the way things they did were really kind of mature. And it was some of the bigger banks, so HSBC, the well ones that I was working at. And then when I moved from there into more of a consulting practice world, I realized that not everyone was like that, that so many businesses hadn't reached that point. And that was kind of my epiphany moment of, I think there are ways that we can help organizations be better. And it wasn't about a one-size-fits-all. So one of the great projects I really enjoyed, it was a chemical company. There was a turnaround. They'd been running for a long time. They were starting to lose money. And so I helped them just restructure how they thought about their business, what mattered most, what do you want to do? What do you want to outsource? And how can you optimize things like supply chain? So just looking at each part of the business and saying, what would be better if? Could we do something with that? And that led me into a SaaS company. So it was an analytics firm. Startup, really exciting times of all that energy of you in an office and you're fighting the world and you're going against the big companies. And that was just super exciting. So we built that, we built out processes from scratch. So that was less about could we improve it? Well, how do we design? We've got a blank sheet of paper here. Let's do something that we think could work in the best possible way. So we did that and then we learned and then we improved upon that. I then moved into a much larger organization through the exit process into our next one. And that was a slightly different story. It was, how do we take what we've got and become a multiplier for each of the existing business units? We were the analytics team. They were a very established organization. And we were kind of digitizing their world. We need to do that in a way that wasn't offensive and wasn't threatening to the existing team. So that was very much data-driven, but actually a people change experience that we need to get right, to get them on board and get some early wins and show that actually we're going to be able to ramp everyone up here. From there, moved into an organization that was a master data company, scaling fast, really high growth, didn't have a post-sale organization. And that was really the one that was most exciting to build out the, you've got a great product and a great growth engine, but actually we're pretty poor at making sure what happens after contract turns out to be great. So how do we define that? And we built all the different parts of the business around that. And then the final two legs of the journey, because there is an end here, I then moved to a really large organization, SAP, they're about 110,000 people worldwide. And still within that, there were lots of different processes. So the challenge we had there was we'd acquired lots of large, I would say mid-size, so kind of around the billion-dollar mark cloud organizations. We had 14 of them. And we need to stitch them together into a unified experience for the customer. So that was more nuanced, lots of bringing together. And where I am right now, Proofpoint, cybersecurity, where I lead their customer success across the world. We are figuring out how we do things in different countries. So it's very, very heavy on the cultural alignment piece. We're a US-centric organization. Now we need to become a global organization. And that's setting up new centers of excellence, it's making sure we can pivot and adjust to the needs of local markets. So keep your core, but be adaptable at the edges.
That's awesome. I think maybe what you were focusing on there is bringing together sales, services, customer engagement. Talk to me about what it's really like to refocus on that kind of a wider customer experience. And maybe, like, are there warning signals or signs that you see where something needs to change in the customer outcomes?
We normally see a lot of organizations will do customer feedback, customer voice. So whether it's an NPS survey, it's a net promoter score, or a customer satisfaction or customer effort, it's not uncommon to have that. And digging into those feedback comments and then starting to turn those into an action plan is an easy starting point, because the customer's telling you, I would like you to be better here. When the customer stops talking to you, that's really where the worry is. When they're in that moment of, I'm complaining because I believe A, you're going to listen, and B, you might actually do something about it, it's actually a really good moment to act, develop a relationship of trust, and now we're building a partnership between a company and a customer. So those moments I actually quite like. So kind of step one for me is, let's look at the data. Let's see what the customers are telling us. The other part is anecdotal. So where are we seeing friction? Where are internal processes creating rub against each other? So we'll get that through employee feedback. What could be better if? Same kind of thing. You hear those moments of what I would call kind of grit in the system. Well, are they quick wins? Could we look at some of those things? The bigger, more strategic way is to take a big step back and figure out, what's the customer life cycle? So a customer may join us. How long do we expect them to be with us? Are they a lifetime? Is this a three-year thing? And then they've solved the problem, they're going to move on. Is it much shorter, very tactical? So what's the life cycle that we expect that customer to be with us? Then if I was to look at each part, what's the customer journey? So when they're coming to you as a new customer, what does that journey look like from first moment to we've now signed a contract? What does a journey look like to get them from I've signed a contract to now I've got something up and running and working? And then there's another subsequent piece, which is, okay, it's up and running, how do I get my value out of it? We had an ROI. How do I go about achieving that? And then how do I build upon that? How do I grow with you? Because if you're doing a great job, actually, chances are, I want the next thing from you. Help me to be successful. So where else might you help me? How do you tell me about those things in a way that's constructive and in my interest as a customer? So journey maps are just really, really important and so valuable. And then the other pinning of that is, all right, so who's doing what? What's your processes, systems, tools, best practices, etc.? What we found at SAP was, overall, the customer life cycles were pretty similar. The journey maps were slightly different. So in some teams, different people did different things at different points of that journey. And then we looked and said, well, so what would the best thing be? It may be that one organization was quite bootstrapped, didn't have a lot of cash, or didn't see value in, say, professional services, and they really liked the area. So they'd engineered the product to be super lean to set up deliberately. Others wanted to make money out of professional services. And went, that's fine, let's make the product infinitely configurable, and we'll do big engagements, because actually it wouldn't be a bad thing for the customer to be able to define it. So we found that organizations had made great decisions, but for different business reasons. And we just had to figure out, what's the thread? What would be the common ground? And on the edges of that, does it make sense to do something? Because also for me, kind of rule number one is, don't break it. We've just bought this great company. Don't destroy it in year one, because that's not going to help anyone. So that's kind of, I guess, my principles I think about when we get these organizations. Find your common ground that is anchored to the overall company vision, mission, values of success. Look at where the edges are, particularly handover points, How do we make those as smooth as possible? And then let's make sure we show up in a way that makes sense to the customer. So underneath the scenes, you might be all doing different things. When you show up for the customer, the kind of front of house moment, you have to be unified. So we found that in different customer care models, different people would show up at different stages. So we kind of just looked at it and went, let's orchestrate that. Let's make sure we've kind of got a conductor that's making the music flow. And you can all play differently, that's fine, but it's got to come together for customer experience.
I think that's really interesting about having, I guess, that conductor role, because just hearing you speak about it, it makes me think about some of the challenges that would sit underneath, because some of these teams might have quite competing targets, aims, and all those different things. And I think when you've got, I guess, a huge organization, could be SAP or any other kind of a large kind of a SaaS provider, you know, they're servicing a really large client typically too. So, and when you've got different teams, they've got their own targets, they might be vying or competing with each other to some degree for a client's attention. How does that work with that conductor role? Because I, like, obviously it makes sense getting people to show up to a client in a consistent way, but how do you bring people on board in that journey when maybe they've invested a lot of time in their kind of a client relationships? I think it's this, like, I've just seen it consulting, people vying for a client's attention. What do you do, Grant, to manage people in that process?
You've really hit the nub of one of the headaches we had. Everyone wanted to be the special friend. And if you tell them they're not, that's moving their cheese. It becomes an ego thing, right? Well, I thought I was this level of importance in the organization, and now you're telling me I'm less than. Where we did it was we said, what are the different types of customers we might have? So where you've got really big globals, let's say an oil super major that is just huge and spread geographically everywhere, you may want to have special focus in each region. And that's okay, because a customer is equally complex and need that attention. So that was kind of one thing we did was, who are the types? Most organizations will have a sales segmentation, maybe a strategic, named, commercial, or whatever it is you call to segment your customer types. So use that as a great starting point, because typically the sales function will be one of the most powerful organizations because they're revenue generating, right? So that makes sense. So if you've got that segmentation, wonderful. Can you then define or describe what does a customer look like on the other side of that? What are the common attributes? Now, how do we show up for the customer? Again, I always take the, look at it through the customer's eyes. What's their experience of us? And the customer complaints that we had was, if you've got lots of different business units, and they all might be, if they're say in the software space, they all want the CIO as their absolute advocate, stakeholder, special friend. I want my quarterly business review with them, or my monthly touch point, whatever it might be. And it's just too much. So we had to take a big step back again and say, who would be the best person to match up with each of the stakeholders and the customer? And we would then work with the customer. We had a model where we said, go through this with the customer. Who do you want? How often do you want touch points? What do you want to be updated with? Now, on our side of the house, we'll make sure you get the right person. And so we then have to do the change management internally to say, this is why we're doing it. This is the reasons that are behind it for the customer's benefit. And this is how you play into that. Now, in some big organizations, you'd have a really seasoned experience, maybe a customer partner role. In others, where it's through an external third party, you might have a commercial account manager that's running, 100 accounts. And at the other end of the spectrum, it's one person running one, because they're going to spend so much with us, it's worth it. So you just have the right size, my point. We ended up making, because we were big and complicated, we made 8 different models. In each of those models, we were clear about who's at the center, who plays a part along the customer lifecycle. How does that work for each of the business units that connect into that? So it was a labor of love. We got there, It took about a year to get through that well and out the other side of it, but customers loved it. They were clear, they were able to engage, and the sales, the cross sales, the upsells, the motions, it all bore the fruit for us.
It sounds like the role, it may be like all about the customer, but really it's a strategy role, a culture role, and then a bit of delivery too, or an enabler role, less of delivery. Does that kind of sit with you as well, like the strategy piece?
Yeah, it does. We had a session recently with our leadership, and we were figuring out, we have a new CEO come in, new CFO, they're clear on where we're headed. So our job then is, how do we set up to execute against that as well? So we need a strategy within a strategy. So if the heading of the company is to go that way, all right, how do we make that happen as quick as possible? What could we accelerate to do that? So we then come up with our strategy. And to your point, we're then going to get people on board, change management, it's hearts, it's minds, it's the soft stuff. You've got to get them to come with you on the journey. Otherwise, they're just going to be dragging their feet. And understandably, because many people don't like change, and it's a threat. So we've got to get them to want to come with us. There's a lot of comms, a lot of education, a lot of winning people over. And then it's about efficiency execution. We've got to be able to execute this stuff. So let's get that business cranking in the best possible way. And now can we spin that up? It's not about making people run at 1,000 miles an hour. It's really deliberate about, how do I enable a person to be their best self? Sounds a bit fuzzy, but actually, what are the things in their way that are stopping them? Most people want to come to work and do a great job, honestly. So what is it that's slowing you down? What can I remove from the day-to-day that would actually allow you to show up better for the customer? Let's solve those problems. And then all of a sudden, your efficiencies kick in and things get working really well.
Let me ask you one thing. We've got quite a few label mates and clients who work in multinational organizations. And I'm curious, how do you find being UK-based where in a US-centric company?
So I'm a night owl by nature. I've never been an early riser. I tried for years to try and be one of those people that are up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and they run a marathon and then they go to the office, and it's just not me. So I leaned into, what am I actually naturally good at? And a big part of that was, I actually quite liked the meetings. So that's the bad news. If you're going to want to work with a West Coast company that doesn't come online until 3 or 4 in your afternoon, there is a reality to that, that your diary at the end of the day is going to be really, really busy. So lean into that. Make sure that you set up the right conversations and you get access to people. So what I found in my experience of being kind of international, I can deal with APJ Asia in the morning. And that's great. They're finishing off their days. We're coming online. We're picking up things and making sure we're getting handovers coming through. We'll work a European day. And then we're into the back end of the day where we're with our US colleagues. And we're talking about, let's make sure this is right, that is right. So what I found quite useful is almost setting them up for their day. So that when they're going into their day, they're starting out with some of the agenda points that are top of mind for me. Now, it sounds a little sneaky, but actually I found it works really well because I've had all the time of prep to get there. Then when I'm kicking off their day, so my one-to-ones with some of my team there, you know, are going to be setting their day out, making sure, you know, are they thinking about the right things, what's on their minds, where are they heading for the and just collaborating. So I found that building those relationships, being available to be part of the conversation, it might be uncomfortable, we might have some late night sessions, but be available to be in that conversation because that's the price you pay for not being there. But the value add I bring is I can give you now what's happened in your day in Asia, Europe, East Coast. When somebody gets to West Coast, you know, I've kind of lived the whole day for you. Here you go.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's really powerful because I think it can be a source of insecurity for a lot of leaders who aren't based in the kind of a head office. So I think that kind of making yourself available and like the trade-offs and just like, I guess, leaning into that, I guess you have to. So you've worked on many software companies and ones that are relying on, I guess, SaaS companies, recurring revenue. Can you share some insights on how to navigate pricing and features?
I feel that pricing is somewhere close to a dark art and magic. What I mean by that is, I had an experience early in my career. It's a very small experience, but it's actually really good. There was a small company, and they were at a trade fair, and they were selling some small peripheral devices. And it discounted them down because they wanted to get rid of them. And it was a mouse, just a computer mouse, and selling them for a few pounds each. And these things weren't going anywhere. They were a really good quality product. There's nothing wrong with them. But people perceived it as a bargain basement item and thought, I don't want a cheap item. I want a good item. So next day, this small business owner tried it slightly differently. Marked it up, made it a premium item. These things were going out the door. And the product hadn't changed. And that's where I kind of, for me, landed on, I think the job of product team is design a great product to solve the end user problem, whatever that is, but solve the business or the user's need. And if you've got a great product, now a commercial team can turn that into revenue and allow the commercial team to figure out, what's the market ready for? So are you entering a new market? Do you need to go in and actually take market share? So you might need to price slightly under to scoop up. Are you the leader in the market? Do you have the brand power to charge a premium? You see that in the likes of the Apples, et cetera. Yeah, they can take a phone, transform it into something that's better for a user, and now we can add a premium to that. And all of a sudden, you've got a revenue model which is incredibly powerful. So I think you have to understand, who are you? Where are you pitching yourself in the market against competitors? What will the market tolerate? How mature is that market? How mature are your customers? Are they the type of customer that they're trying this for the first time? Or are you actually one of many? So I think there's so many variables. I think that's challenging for a product. I actually think that is the domain of a commercial strategy to get that bit right.
When you describe it to me like that, it made me think about, like, it's the separation of church and state. So if church is the product team, they can really give insights around the customer and their kind of a perspective, but it's like a state's decision, or it's like the commercial team need to make a call on something. And I think that separation is actually quite interesting, the separation away from, you know, it's like you've built a product, you're super passionate about it. I think that may cloud your decision. So it's interesting to kind of separate it slightly. So thank you. That was a good one.
The other thing I'd add into that, often I see product teams will evangelize features, functions, buttons. And actually, the customer doesn't really care, sadly, about what you just spent 4 months building. What they're interested in is, and what does that do for me? And if you can't get that through to the customer, here's the business value that has for you, you're just not going to sell it because it's just a button. Sadly, it's just a workflow. So I would say also the accountability is really important between those two teams. That feedback loop, you know, product accountability, make this a great product for the customer. Commercial team, you know, make sure you're set up to get that into the market, bring it to market, know who you're going to take it to, all the sell function. So all that go-to-market piece, I think, is critical. But in the feedback loop between the two, from go-to-market team back into products, here's what's playing well, here's what's not. Yeah, how do you help with that? Product team, listen to it. They're on your side, right? They don't want to beat you up. They want to sell more of your product. So take that sometimes harsh feedback with all of the love it's intended to come with, make your product sellable. So, yeah, I know you might want to design the next 10 steps, but if the customers aren't ready for that and they only want two more good steps, nail those two steps, make them brilliant, and then iterate again.
I'm curious how you would describe your leadership style, and if you feel like, is it something that's come naturally to you, or is it something that you've, yeah, cultivated?
I think I've evolved over the years. I think when I was young as an early manager, so I was in my 20s when I first had my first management role. I was a very young manager in HSBC Bank. And I had an opportunity given to me. There was a very, very senior person that was leaving the bank. I was one of the last hires. I think they took pity on me. They saw someone that maybe could be shaped into something more than they were, because I definitely wasn't the finished article. I'm still not, for the record. And I really benefited from their wisdom and coaching. And because of that, I've always looked for opportunities to have mentors. Who can I learn from? What is it that they are doing that I could benefit from? But really where I think I found my stride was, what are my natural strengths? How can I develop them more and maybe worry less about all of the weaknesses I've got and making them all strengths? Because I think that's a losing battle. But how do I build a team around me that will compensate for that? So I really value, in my leadership style, I value people that will challenge my opinion. I want you to tell me that I'm wrong or I've got blind spots. Give me that information. So my personal style, I value transparency. So I want to create an environment of safety, that psychological safety, where in the room, we can battle out the argument as long as you want. It's never going to be about you or me. It's going to be about the problem. So let's go to town on that, because if we can really figure that out, we're going to be stronger when we leave the room. But that's kind of maybe step number two is, and when we leave the room, let's make sure we're all committed to it. So we can argue till the cows come home. But at some point, someone's going to make a call and say, okay, diminishing returns now in this conversation. We're going to make a decision. We're going to go with it. At that point, let's be committed and go for it and be united as a team. And that's where I think for me, the building the relationships with people that, you know, I trust you, I'm going to power you, and I'm also going to make sure I back you up. If you make a bad choice, I will be on your side. Now, we're going to have a conversation at some point about this, but in the moment, I want throwing you under the bus. So I'm going to allow you to make mistakes. Now, hopefully they're not going to be horrendous, because we'll talk about it. And if you're concerned, come and talk about it. Let's chew on this for a while. And then let's come to a decision about what you think you'd like to do. So I think I'm much more of a coaching environment than a directing person. It's probably because the level of people I enjoy working with, they've seen it 10 times before. They're not after someone telling them how to do it. They're more often wanting to talk through, let me vocalize this, let me think about it, let me kind of coach it out. And actually, you've probably got the answer. So I think kind of that's where I get to. Twinned with the whole autonomy mastery purpose, my default position is I trust people to want to do the best thing. Can I give you an environment where you can go and make choices, that I am empowering you to do that? You will be held accountable for all of your choices, but we're going to do that in a good way. You know, this isn't something that you're going to get burned on. We're going to learn from it. We're going to go again.
Yeah. Just one last thing on the leadership thing before we move on to the quick fire questions. Is there any advice you would give to people stepping into management roles that maybe don't have the confidence and experience that, say, you have now from, you know, all the experience in your career, and they're maybe aware of stepping into a management role, or they're trying to be a better leader?
Listen, just listen. I had a wonderful experience early on in my career where my confidence moved into arrogance. I then thought I knew all the answers and definitely didn't have them, and was about to make some terrible choices. And I could sense that things weren't right. And so I invited some of the people into an office that I had, and it was a wonderful big office with oak panels. I was really feeling like I was the dog's dinner. Right? Anyway, I said, things aren't great, right? So tell me what I'm not doing. And they, for the next hour, tore me to shreds, absolutely just obliterated me. And I kind of humbly began to thanks. And off I went. They were right about, I'd say, almost everything. And what I would say for that new person is, listen to the people that are doing the job. They actually know what they're doing. And if they're telling you something, chances are they're coming to you because they hope you can make a difference. Now, not everyone has a perfect or pure agenda. So you got to apply some judgment. And that's where the listening part comes in. Get around the view. Don't trust just your judgment. Get lots of others. Come to an informed position, but then go for it. Make a call and then kind of go forward. And if you get it wrong, well, probably chances are you're making some progress. Just tweak and pivot from that point. I think don't be paralyzed by indecision. At the same time, don't be, I guess, forced into acting too quickly. If you've got that judgment, you think, I'm not sure about that. Take a minute, noodle it over, talk to someone else, get some advice, go again.
Perfect. That's awesome. And great use of the phrase noodle over. We'll move on to our quick fire questions. So I just have a handful of questions. And this is where probably I'll just be getting a little bit nosy. Would you describe yourself? Are you more of a theoretical or hands-on learner? How do you like to learn?
I think I'm a doer. I'm looking up kind of into my brain here. When I learned volleyball, there's only so many times I could be coached. I had to actually play the ball, be in the game, get the feel, and then I could improve from that point.
Can we please describe your taste in interior design?
My wife's.
That's such a great answer. I wish my husband said that. In another life, what would your career be?
Oh, adventurer. I'd love to go and explore the Amazon.
Great. And what makes somebody a good traveling companion?
Ability to handle change. Just don't stress. Because travel's a nightmare. Things go wrong all the time. So relax and enjoy the journey.
What was the first work thing you were really proud of?
First work thing I'd really proud of? I would say... it was in my dad's business, and there was just a way he did things, and I thought it could be done better. And he wasn't convinced, so I tried it, and I eventually got him to come around to the idea. It's such a tiny example, but it was my personal moment of I improved a small thing.
And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I had a really good chairman who told me, I can't motivate you, but I can inspire you to motivate yourself. And I thought it was really good words, and he was absolutely right. So that's one I think is probably a life lesson to me.
Last one, this one we ask everybody. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you, Grant?
How weird? I'm what, off the charts.
I was not expecting that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm like a data nerd. I like kind of watching cartoons. Yeah, I could probably go on for a while here. So I think we all have our, here's what we do professionally. I think I've come to terms with we're all a little bit odd, and just be okay with that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I think that kind of brings us to a close. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you. I loved it.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.